Those podcasts are pretty much about looking at the past, at least as it lives in memory. Although we try and focus on ideas that may be every bit as relevant now as they were then. In my study, the past is a huge subject nowadays, in spite of a reluctance in my youth to look back. Now family history suddenly becomes interesting, for example. I've always taken it as an article of faith that we need to know the past in order to have a better future. There is the old adage that to forget history was to be condemned to repeat it. But the place of the past in shaping the future seems to me a struggle between attitudes around two poles, and it's fascinating to follow the shifts between those poles at different times. For want of better descriptions, I'll call them, on the one hand, the past are forget it pole, and on the other hand, the you must remember this pole. Let's look at the are forget it pole first. There are diverse approaches to this attitude. Henry Ford said history is bunk. In other words, the practical mind finds the past useless. But, on the other hand, Henry David Thoreau, a very different mindset, also thought one was blessed not to lose a moment remembering the past, forgetfulness being the natural state and thus the preferred state. In Australia, we've had the young tree green idea. Australians who had been in Europe in the 1930s, such as Manning Clark and Patrick White, returned to Australia after World War II wanting to forget about Europe and its culture of death. They wanted to make a fresh start. This was an attempt to see Australia as a clean slate, a cultural and literary equivalent of terra nullius, perhaps. Ironically, this was just as others, such as George Johnson and Charmian Cliff, were leaving Australia because of a quite opposite feeling about Australian culture. Fresh starts have always had their attractions. In 1996, my wife Wei and I visited some Buddhist temples in China. It was a situation where the guidebook indicated that the Red Guards had trashed the temple and the Cultural Revolution. But when you got there, information on the site said that the British had trashed it in 1861 and the French in 1905 or some such. One temple had been rebuilt 17 times over the centuries. Red Guardism itself has a long history. The pioneering Red Guards, I suppose, were the English Puritans, who trashed the churches and destroyed a lot of art. This was to prove consistent with a long tradition of Christian obliteration of the cultures of colonised peoples, of the heathens. The destruction of the Summer Palace in Beijing being a mind-boggling example of this. This is 1861 again. Then, of course, there was Year Zero in Paris in 1793 and the dreadful attempt to do it again in Cambodia in 1975. We don't want to go there. Such streams of the past are forget us, show that not knowing history can really mean repeating its mistakes in the worst possible way. So let's look at the you must remember this poll. There are many aspects to this too. But we can remember that reference to the past was fundamental to two of the most powerful influences on the 20th century, Marx and Freud. Both wanted to use the past to generate a future, at the social and at the individual levels, respectively. As the traumas of that 20th century start to slowly fade in the memories of the living, we can ask whether anything worthwhile was gained from either of those philosophies. I guess I can't answer that big a question here, but let's remember, particularly in reference to Marx, that there are numerous myths of the Golden Age and its restoration. Marx was part of the Judeo-Christian tradition, giving society a secularized version of the biblical fall, the struggle of history, of redemption and restoration. That narrative was a powerful cultural driver for 2,000 years. It gave meaning to life and to the most appalling suffering. Hopefully we have learned to take care in our commitments to this sort of a dream by now. Or we might find ourselves back to the Red Guards, or perhaps say the Hitler Youth singing "The Future Belongs to Me." The story that derives from the Judeo-Christian tradition resonates with the whole story of life as a journey, going out, of finding adventures, and then of coming home. Such a story resonates too with memory, but in fact none of this is really memory. It is not reality, as science or hard-headed historical research would tell us. There was never a golden age, and therefore we can't return to it. However, this does teach us something about the role of story. which is very much about memory too. Story is essential for mnemonic purposes in pre-literate cultures, the you must remembers, teaching the tribe its history, how to live, and so on. I have wanted to explore how to live in the Australian environment. Simon Sharma, in his book Landscape and Memory, tells us that landscape is culture before it is nature. He illustrates this entertainingly for 500 plus pages, but the idea doesn't seem to go anywhere. I think Indigenous Australia has taken the idea much further, embracing and filling the landscape with story in a way that I wish today we could be stronger and more creative about in Australia, and more aware of the Indigenous past too, for that matter. There was never a literary terra nullius either. My work has been driven by this sort of thinking. It started with the Buckley story. I came to it via concern for the environment, wanting to recall how things were compared to what they are now, to embrace the landscape with story in a way that would help to give it respect. The past taught me something. Young Buckley, for me, was a man who told himself, "Don't look back." I thought, how else could he cope with his fate? But I can't seem to help looking back myself now. We all have sites of memory, of heritage, that we'd like to keep. Two of mine, a section of Gardiner's Creek here in Melbourne, where I first lived as a child with the story of Buckley, and an aunt's farm. These are both environments and pasts literally buried now by freeways. Knowing the past tells us that many of the animals, which is to say the characters in Indigenous stories, have been obliterated from the landscape. That should tell us something about shaping policies. At least there's a sort of cultural redguardism at work there too. My take on it after all this rambling, well, I still believe we have to know and understand the past for the sake of the future, but there's no formula. I'm still sympathetic to the young tree green idea, but the slate isn't a blank. It's got patterns around it with rainbow snakes and platypuses and bushstone curlews calling in the night and many other things haunting the landscape that won't go away yet. Here's just one of them that Melburnians should know but probably won't.